Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, December 30, 2021. 20 young men are arrested in Jonglei State for starting intercommunal violence.
There were two groups, one group from Alliance Section, another group from UN Section.
And civil servants in Upper Nile State go on strike.
When the money were received, the July money, salary, the amount was not 100%. And also, they reduced the allowances.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Police in Jonglei State capital Bor have arrested more than 20 young men suspected of engaging in intercommunal violence. The state police commissioner says fighting broke out between two sets of young people who were undergoing cultural initiation, leaving several people injured. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Major General Joseph Mayena Kon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, says police have arrested at least 20 suspects of violence that occurred Wednesday in Bor Town. Kon says the fighting was instigated by two groups of youth from Pathuyith and Juet clans who were undergoing initiation. It escalated into rioting involving sticks, machetes, and gunfire.
There were two groups. One group from Alliance Section, another group from UN Section. Then these boys, they differed on certain, I don't know, but we were surprised by the fighting. So when they fought, the youth of Alliance seemed to be defeated. And then there, the youth of Pathuyith, they came in to defend the youth of Alian. Then from there, the fighting took and accelerated. People fought, they hit themselves. Some people were, their legs were broken, and others, their hands were broken.
General Akon says dozens of people were injured, including local wrestling champion Majura Yuen, who suffered a broken arm, and some members of organized forces who were sent to de-escalate the violence and arrest the culprits. He says the injured people have been admitted to Bor State Hospital for treatment. Akon says the cause of the fighting remains unclear, but adds that these young men in different age groups in the Dinka Bor community, especially the youngest set, undergoing cultural initiation, often fight to establish superiority.
We are in the town. In the town, there's no need for people to fight each other, you know. It is completely forbidden. I urge the parents not to to advise the children. Okay, when the children are celebrating, they should be advised not to, to create problems in the town. Because town, it belongs to all of us, not individuals or sections. All right, so they should know that they should respect the people in the town. There are many people, many nationalities are in the town, like Ethiopians, Kenyans are there, Ugandans are there, and they don't know this tradition of ours. So we don't want to disturb people when they are doing their business.
Malanga Yuen, the Bor County Paramount Chief, condemns the incidents, describing it as unfortunate. Yuen urges the Pathuyith and Juet clans to remain calm.
I want to tell the people of Bor that what happened is not good at all. Adults are not supposed to be involved in the fighting of young people. I want the clans that were involved in the fighting to be calmed and allow the police to do the investigations.
General Akon says the police managed to contain the situation and are now investigating it, as well as looking for more suspects who are in hiding. He says the suspects will be arraigned in court as soon as the investigations are completed. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Friends and family of recently deceased South African civil rights icon, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, have described him as an impish moral giant. At a memorial service in Cape Town, Tutu spent decades fighting against injustice, first against the vicious system of apartheid, deprived him and millions of black people of basic human rights. In recent years, though Tutu criticized the ruling National African Congress, the ANC, for not caring about poor compatriots. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
In the 1980s, when apartheid security forces were unleashing fury on Cape Townships, Tutu stood in the trenches with fellow activist Cheryl Carolus. At the service, she described him as a man who for 90 years survived against all odds.
Father Desmond survived polio as a child, tuberculosis as a teenager, and a few bouts of prostate cancer as an adult. In his opposition to the Nationalist Party government, there were many attempts to assassinate him, but mercifully those did not succeed, as they did with killing many of our leaders.
Carola said some of her fondest memories of Tutu were the stand-up fights they used to have. She recalled one in particular after a church service in 1985.
Father called on all citizens of Cape Town to join him in a march in defiance of the state of emergency after a night in which police had killed a number of protesters in the townships of the Cape Flats. One of the congregants at that service was Gordon Oliver, the then mayor of Cape Town, elected exclusively by only whites.
Carolus and other activists were furious that Tutu had invited an apartheid mayor to an anti-apartheid march.
We demanded to know from him who gave him the mandate to make such a serious decision. He put his hands on his hips in what I called his pink dress, stuck out his chin, his eyes spitting fire, and replied forcefully, "I have a mandate from God."
Carola says the march turned out to be a watershed moment in the battle against apartheid. To have a whites-only mayor at a demonstration for non-racialism in the 1980s, she says, was a powerful symbol, and Tutu had realized this from the beginning.
That was a moment of people's power that changed the course of history. That march gave a big push for what was to become the Defiance campaign led by the Mass Democratic Movement, which I believe contributed largely to get those in power to finally realize that our freedom was unstoppable and that they had to get to the negotiating table and that they had to release Nelson Mandela and other political prisoners.
From then on, says Carolus, other white leaders, inspired by Tutu, joined black people at protest after protest, like when they and crowds of black people stormed onto whites-only beaches.
Many continued to lose their lives during that defiance campaign, but that did not stop our people. In his inimitable style, he helped us to have the courage to reach out to people like Gordon Oliver, and gave to good people like Gordon the clarity and the courage to act in unison with the majority of the people in our nation.
Carolus, like Tutu, criticized the ANC for being obsessed with naked power and self-enrichment, and for betraying the solemn promises of freedom made during the struggle against apartheid.
He invoked the ire of apartheid leaders, and he also invoked the ire of our newly elected leaders when he alerted us to the dangers of the gravy train. When those we had elected to lead us in our first democratically elected parliament were discussing their salaries and their perks. And just look at the mess of entitlement and corruption we are sitting with today.
Carolus believes one of Tutu's final wishes would have been for human beings to love one another, no matter their differences, no matter how hard it sometimes is. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Civil servants in Upper Nile State Capital Malakal have gone on strike to protest against what they call the state government's failure to carry out 100% salary increase announced earlier by the National Ministry of Labour and Public Service. The workers say the state increased civil servants' salary by only 70% without bonuses or allowances. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Civil servant Wong Marol from the Upper Nile State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says he expected to see his salary increased by 100%, which was supposed to happen when the state paid workers the July arrears, according to a directive by President Salva Kiir. He says when he received his salary arrears, he realized his salary went up by only 70%. Marol says the payment also failed to include bonuses and allowances per a circular issued by the national government.
The top up of salary from the president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir Mayardit, has hurt 100% to all civil servants in South Sudan. When the money were received, the July money salary, the amount was not 100%. And also, they reduced the allowances. But now, the money are now less. There is no allowances, and also, it's not 100%. Because the 100%, a one who receives 5,000 should receive 10,000 South Sudanese pounds. But now, they are not receiving such amounts.
Civil servants Mading Malwala Luong from the Ministry of Education says the civil servants in Malakal staged peaceful demonstrations on Tuesday and Wednesday because state authorities failed to implement the new salary structure. He says the state officials threatened the civil servants and tried to force them to accept their salaries so the workers walk off the job.
There was threat from as a serious forces who were being directed to clap us down. And that is a threat we only experienced, but the police has intervened. Police intervened directly to tell them that this is a constitutional right in order for them to do any demonstration which is there in the constitution, and they have to protest as long as there is no violence, and that is it.
Marol says civil servants' efforts to dialogue with the state authorities have all been in vain because the authorities refused to meet with them. Marol urges the national government in Juba to intervene, and so civil servants in Upper Nile states are given their full rights, just as in other states.
Yes, the government in Juba is to make response because he's the one increasing the money, he's the one topping up the money. But when the leaders in state, they say this money were not being brought by their government, then they're supposed to intervene and make a feedback. It can form a committee, and then the committee can come to Malakal and where and inform to give a full feedback to a civil servant. Then the civil servant are to do what? Are to be sure they don't have allowances. But some of them said they receive a full payment, like in Jonglei.
Marol says civil servants have not been paid for about 5 months. Efforts to reach Upper Nile Governor Budok Anyang and State Finance Minister Pal Deng for comment were unsuccessful, as several calls to their phones went unanswered. Devin Nyang, the Minister of Cabinet Affairs in Upper Nile States, says the state government is negotiating with the civil servants over the matter.
They were engaged and they are negotiating a mutual solution. It was a strike, but now I think the situation is calm and the government is working on how to address their issues. And there are some services that they were also demanding. So, these things they were told to be addressed. That's no problem.
3 weeks ago, hundreds of government employees in Jonglei State rejected their lower-than-expected salaries and staged demonstrations to protest what they termed the state's modified salary structure. Last week, a committee tasked by President Salva Kiir to investigate the root causes of the protests ordered the state to pay the workers according to the new salary structure. This week, the civil servants called off the strike after they received their salaries with additional allowances according to the new salary structure. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in Uganda rearrested a writer. Find out why after the break.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Writers and poets have condemned the arrest of award-winning Ugandan author who is being held without charge for alleged offensive communication. Security forces arrested him on Thursday after Rukira Bashaje criticized the government. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
President of the Poets Association Uganda, Ronald Sekaja, says the arrest of author Kakwenza Rukira Bashaija aims to reinforce fear among writers. Unknown Ugandan forces arrested the award-winning author Tuesday after he published comments critical of President Yoweri Museveni's son. Sekaja tells VOA that Rukira Bashaija's arrest shows that the government allows little space for criticism.
If anyone thinks that it comes up as abuse or as insult, then charges need to be placed and they take him to face the law. I think our biggest concern as the writing community is the manner in which he's arrested and no charges are placed and he's been in detention.
Rukira Bashaija's lawyer, Aaron Kiza, says the author is being held at a hidden interrogation facility in Kampala.
They are claiming he made some offensive communication. They are not giving us details on those. So they are charging him with offensive communication. Of course, we know that him and the first son have had some exchange on Twitter.
Rukira Bashaija on Twitter called Museveni's son, Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, obese, drunk, bad-tempered, and a rotting corpse of a future president. Kainerugaba is seen as a possible successor to his long-ruling father in Uganda's 2026 election. Rukira Bashaija, a 2021 Penn Prize winner for International Writer of Courage, posted about his arrest on Tuesday on Facebook. "Men with guns are breaking my door," he wrote. "They say they are policemen, but are not in uniform. I've locked myself inside." Kainerugaba seemed to take credit for the arrest. He posted on Twitter, "I want the arrest of Kakwenza Rukira to be a lesson to all those who think they can abuse me on social media and walk away scot-free." Makerere University professor and writer Stella Nyanzi says the author's arrest shows Museveni's son is just as intolerant of critics as his parents.
"The face of the enemy has changed. It is the first time that the first son is engaging in the sort of brutal arrest that we have known his father and mother to make on writers. It's not an accident that Kakwenza writes as he does. It is of worry to be isolated."
Nyanzi herself was jailed in 2019 for writing sexually explicit criticism of Uganda's First Lady, Janet Museveni. Penn International on Twitter condemned what they called Rukira Bashaija's violent, unlawful arrest, called for his immediate release, and expressed grave concern about his safety. Ugandan security forces in 2020 detained and tortured Rukira Bashaija, he says, for writing his book, The Greedy Barbarian, which describes high-level corruption in a fictional country. He was arrested a second time after he wrote the book, Banana Republic, which detailed his alleged torture at the hands of military intelligence. Uganda's police spokesperson declined to comment on Rukira Bashaija's arrest Tuesday, saying he was too busy to take calls. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
An Egyptian court sentenced three leading activists to prison terms for spreading false news undermining national security. The State Department declared itself disappointed with the latest sentencings. What progress there has been in Egypt lately consists of less punitive treatment for people who should never have been in legal jeopardy at all. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi discussed this development with Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo.
Sisi government feels domestically and internationally strong enough and strategically important to stand firm and not bow to such repeated foreign pressures, which do not serve the cause of the defendants anyway. Many different American administrations used to play such a card of suspending part of the aid under similar excuses, but later released them because of the important strategic relations between the two countries. Egypt understands this game and plays the ball back. The U.S. still needs Egypt strategically on many files, including the Palestinian, Iran, counterterrorism, stability in the East Mediterranean, Libya, and Sudan. So those strategic interests will overtake any side diplomatic talk about human rights from the American perspective. And that's why the regime doesn't feel that this pressure is serious.
In September, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi announced his national human rights strategy. A hopeful few regarded the measure as a positive step for a former general who has been keeping thousands of political prisoners. Skeptics, however, considered it window dressing intended to appease the Biden administration so that the U.S. military aid would continue to flow. Judging by the latest news from Egypt, is there a serious attempt to improve human rights in Egypt?
If it was to appease the Biden administration, it would be considered a big failure because the White House did not invite Sisi to the Democracy Summit in December and was not convincing for the administration enough to prevent suspending part of the American aid to Egypt. Sisi is feeling strong and well consolidated internally and regionally. And he feels that he controls the Islamists. And this strategy started in 2018, and it was only declared in September 2021. And why he did that? For many reasons. One is that they feel that the regime is no longer under threat like after 2013. He also responds to some of the criticism that was made in Geneva by the United Nations, by other Europeans, by the Americans. And so they felt that they should start this process and make the strategy which will be applied gradually because Egypt faced the worst terrorist wave in its modern history during the period 2013-2020. And that's why there was this criticism at that time and not many people were understanding about the situation. And so the regime felt this is the time I have a strategy and it will not be a push button that tomorrow you will have Scandinavian Nordic human rights situation. It will take time, but at least the regime is presenting a blueprint for an action plan that will start to take gradually. In 2022, it will focus on the civil rights and NGOs in Egypt. This is the first stage.
That's Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA senior analyst Muhammad Al-Ashanawi. In the last 4 years, the struggle for gender equality has gained momentum, generating global attention. Young activists are primarily using social media to create awareness while building social movements like the Me Too movement around an issue that has long been ignored in mainly traditional societies. In Morocco, a recent incident between a female student and a professor at the National School of Business and Management located in the northeastern city of Ouja has renewed calls for more action on issues around sexual abuse. Hanne Bezad is a tech entrepreneur, social activist, and author from Morocco. She explains the recent scandal that sparked protests in schools, with students coming together to break their silence and vote to fight against what they say is a culture of sexual abuse.
So there was a scandal that happened at the Moroccan National School of Business and Management in Oujda, in the north of Morocco, that provoked outrage among students and activists. Basically, I read this article this morning on social media about a student being harassed, sexually harassed by a professor. And I read it on the social media of the Moroccan Outlaws, which is this collective that started in 2019 to promote a change in mentalities and civil rights. And I reached out to Sonia Tarab, who's the founder of this collective, and who explained that she had received herself the messages from students to ask her for help and support after one victim reported the case of being harassed to the school administration. She did so through an official letter after she had decided to leave the school with ample proof of the mischief. She had taken snapshots of unsolicited conversations with requests for sexual favors from this professor, sexual explicit comments. And it seems like the professor repeatedly asked for sexual favors in return for validating the student's semester. Okay. He blackmailed her. He threatened to ruin her academic year if she didn't agree to give him an oral sex session. And he also mocked her vulnerability and mentioned that the administration was on his side.
Right. And how are these issues often addressed in the legal system in Morocco? Are there any protections for women who are targeted by sexual predators?
I would say that to this day, and despite the massive strides that civil movements are making, such as Moroccan Outlaws, against all odds, because they have no support, Moroccan Outlaws, for that matter, did not even receive a nonprofit status for 2 years, despite them having asked for it for 2 years. So sexual predation is weakly addressed. You have legal loopholes like the disqualification of irrefutable evidence obtained illegally, such as voice notes on WhatsApp, for instance, and insufficient implementation of the existing laws that are already kind of weak. You do have an article in the Moroccan penal code that says that basically abusing your authority to harass other people by threats, coercion, and other means is sexual harassment, and it's subject to prison sentence from 1 to 2 years and a fine of about $500 to $5,000.
Is that something that is?
It's not enforced. It's not enforced because it's very hard. First of all, it's very hard for victims to speak up, and then when they do, their proof is not taken into account because most of the time those proofs have to be obtained illegally. Of course, you're not going to ask your harasser to confirm that you can use the snapshots of this conversation, right? So to this day, it's very far from the much needed adequate response to what is a rampant culture of undeterred toxic masculinity.
Now, over the last couple of years, at least 3 or 4 years, we've talked about the Me Too movement on the continent, especially in Morocco. You yourself, when we had you, we talked about the petition that you signed 2 years ago. Is this the moment? Is this the Me Too movement in Morocco that has been waiting for?
So many movements have been called the Moroccan Me Too. Masaktesh in 2018 started a movement to condemn the culture of rape and impunity. To this day, nobody knows exactly how prevalent the sexual demands are in Moroccan universities, for instance. If victims fail to report the harassment. And it's true that this movement, Masaktesh, for instance, gained momentum, and Moroccan Outlaws is again doing immense work.
That's Hani Bizzard, a tech entrepreneur, social activist, and author from Morocco. She spoke with my colleague Jackson Bongani via phone. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Khalid and the song Aisha. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being our avid listener. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Aïcha, regarde-moi, oh, Aïcha,
عايشة غير فوق.